My name is Stephen Colston. I am director of the Center for Regional History at San Diego State University. The following is an interview of Milton Wegeforth, and is a part of an oral history project of the Zoological Society of San Diego. The project is a collaborative effort between the Zoological Society and the Center for Regional History. The date of the interview is July 26, 1983, and is being conducted in Mr. Wegeforth's San Diego home.
Where were you born? When were you born?
I was born September 1st, 1916, at 210 Maple Street in San Diego.
Let me ask you about your education. What is your educational background?
Well, I went through all the public schools here, Florence Grammar School and Roosevelt Junior High, and I graduated from San Diego High on June 1934. And then I went to the University of Southern California, and I graduated in Business Administration in 1940, and went back and took a degree in Mechanical Engineer and graduated in 1943.
And your career after then was in?
Pretty much in Mechanical Engineering, yeah. During the war, I spent 3 years with Wright Aeronautical in New Jersey. And following the war, I came back here and opened up a foundry and marine hardware manufacturing business, which my brother and I had until 1950, and then we sold it in 1950. And then I spent 12 years with Solar Aircraft. And right after that, well, I worked for Kettenberg Boat Works for, I guess, about 3 or 4 years. Then I retired in 1968.
I'm particularly interested in your association with our Zoological Society.
Well, after my father died in 1941, then I went on the board of directors at that time, which later became the board of trustees. And I served 40 years with the zoo up until 2 years ago. And I figured 40 years was long enough, and they better get somebody a little bit younger and more spry than I am to take my place and carry on with the board up there.
Were there any particular issues that in your 40 years of being on the board that stand out in your mind that board faced? I'm sure there must be many.
We had a lot of them, yeah. Well, let's see, in what respect do you mean? Controversial issues?
Either controversial or perhaps a major planning issues?
Well, of course, the first major thing that that happened was, you might call an issue, was following the war, admission to the zoo was 25 cents. And I remember we had decided that we had to raise the admission, that we didn't have enough money to cover expenses at the zoo, and something had to be done, so admissions had to be raised. And we had a big debate about whether we were going to raise that admission by 5 cents or 3 cents. And the 3 cents won out. And we raised the admission to 28 cents.
How long was that in effect, the entrance fee?
I don't really remember how long it was in effect. I don't think for too long. But I do remember that was one of the first things that happened right following the war. I wasn't too active during the war because obviously I was back in New Jersey, the zoo was, let's say, struggling along to keep their head above water during that time, because it was pretty difficult to try and do any expansion or anything during that period of the zoo's career. Then I guess the next thing that happened was a major consequence was the building of the restaurant and the administration building, and this was the first time that the zoo had gone out and really borrowed money to any extent that, let's say, put us on the hook to be sure that we had to make good. As I remember, we borrowed $98,000 to build the administration and restaurant, and it didn't take too long to pay it off. Interestingly enough, at that time, right at the exit of the restaurant, we had a gift shop, and the gift shop was not exactly very attractive. It was a set of sawhorses with some boards covering the sawhorses on, and kind of tablecloth draped over them, and then the merchandise was set on top of that. So Dr. Schroeder had come back to the zoo at this time, and he wanted to spend $2,500 to fix up that little gift shop. And there were some members on the board that just couldn't see it. They just didn't want to spend $2,500, and Dr. Schroeder had employed some merchandising experts to come in and tell him what he ought to be doing. Well, we finally got it passed, and as I recall, it took either 2 or 3 months, and it was paid off. And of course, ever since then, the gift store business has been going real great, and been highly successful. And then, of course, after you've talked to Dr. Schroeder, where you're well aware of the long, drawn-out procedure to get the Wild Animal Park started and get it off the ground. There was lots of discussion and dissension in the board about getting into that. Some of the members of the board figured that if the Wild Animal Park came into being, why, it would bleed the funds out of the Balboa Park Zoo, and the Balboa Park Zoo would suffer for it. But finally, when it did get started, and as it proved out, the Wild Animal Park, as you know, is now running in the black the last couple of years. But it did bleed funds out of the Balboa Park Zoo to a very, very large extent, and kept the zoo down here from, let's say, being what it could have been. There was a lot of maintenance that was neglected and capital expenditures that were not made because money was going into the Wild Animal Park. But today, that situation has changed, and I think that now we'll get the Balboa Park back in shape, and the Wild Animal Park is going on and making its own way, and things are looking real good. And I guess, let's see, what other things might have been. Well, of course, we spent a lot of money, a good amount of money on building speed ramps at the zoo, and that was pretty controversial at the time. We had a transportation committee, which I was chairman of for quite a few years, and we had Jim Hoff, who at that time was president of the San Diego bus company here, and Mr. Sullivan from the Santa Fe Railroad, and let's see, I can't think of the other Marty Bowman from the city engineer's office were on the committee, and we looked at every kind of transportation we could think of, even cable cars we might run up and down the hills there, and we finally concluded that the speed ramp was the best way to go. We looked at bridges to go across the canyons and other things, and there were some pretty strong advocates for a bridge, but we finally sold our point of building speed ramps, and they're very, very successful as of right now. One of them is not in very good shape, and there is a question about whether they're going to do anything about it or whether they're going to abandon it. But I personally hope that they're going to get this thing fixed up, because if you put in a bridge, it doesn't help anybody get out of the bottom of the canyon. And the speed ramps do that job, and where they're located is the most highly is the busiest crossroads in the zoo. There are more people across that one spot than any place else. So they do serve a very, very good purpose there, to get people that are not physically able to climb up those canyons, to get them on board and take them up without any strain or pain.
You were a president of the society in 1954? Beginning of 54?
Beginning of 54, for 3 years.
For 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And do you recall any particular issues that stand out in your mind when you're in your term?
Yes, at that time we had started the plans for the children's zoo. Planning for the children's zoo was in process at that time, and I don't recall whether we opened it up during my administration or not, but it was pretty close to that.
Mm-hmm.
But we were in the planning stages, raising money for the zoo. Howard Chernoff was chairman of the committee, and he had raised about half of the funds at the time that the children's zoo opened up.
I see. Is there any other particular issues that you recall? Any particular events or activities that stand out in your mind in your during your term as president?
No, things were pretty quiet right then, because we didn't have very much money to spend.
I see.
But I do recall one thing though that really stands out in my mind, was that right after the administration building was finished and the restaurant was there, Lester Olmsted, who was on the board at that time, and who had been a very close friend of my father, we called a meeting in a corner of the restaurant and sat down with Charlie Schroeder, and I don't recall who else was there, but at least the three of us were there, and the subject of the meeting is, how are we going to get more members? We now have 600 members, and how are we going to get more members? And as you know, the membership now is up around 130,000 people. that would have been about 19. That would have been right along about 1954, I think, that we had that meeting. You just think from 1954 until now, we went from 600 to 130,000 members. It's quite a feat.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. It really is. I wanted to ask, of course, about your father's activity with the zoo, and I'll begin with that. If I could have some information about him, his parents, for example, who were his parents? What were their names and their occupations?
Well, his father came over here from Germany, and the family came over here, or at least he did. I believe he was kind of a political exile that he got out because of the politics over there. And then his first wife died, and his second wife was related to Douglas MacArthur, and she would have been his aunt, I believe. At any rate, there were 13 children, and there were there were six. Of course, they were half brothers and sisters because of the two wives. But the last six, five of them are all doctors, and the other one, Emma, was a girl, and she later came to San Diego too and lived here for the rest of her life. But my father went through the University of Maryland, took his degree in medicine there, later went on and taught at Johns Hopkins, and then he moved to San Diego here in 1911. Started the zoo a month after I was born, second of October 1916. So I've really grown up with it.
You have. So what was the year of your father's birth?
Pardon?
The year of your father's birth.
He would have been born in 1882.
82.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
31 years ago.
Yeah.
And when was he married?
He was married in January 1914.
And your mother's maiden name was?
Rachel Granger.
Granger.
Uh-huh.
Now that's a San Diego family, a San Diego family?
Yeah, Ralph Granger came to San Diego and I think he came here in 1892 or 1893. It must have been around 92 because she was born in 93. So my brother and I are second generation San Diegans.
I see.
It's kind of a rare bird for right now.
Certainly. Well, there was a Granger building downtown. Was that was the name of
that? Yeah, that was
family.
My grandfather's.
I see.
Yeah, he built that.
Mm-hmm. I was particularly interested in knowing when your father became interested in zoos and in animals. I mean, this, I'm assuming, went back a bit in his...
A lot of your questions that you're asking in respect to him are answered, and it began with a roar.
Right.
Have you read that?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
Well, I think that pretty well described it there, that... He was riding downtown one day with one of his friends. I believe he was another doctor, and they went by the old menagerie that was left here from the exposition. And I think my dad made some comment that somebody ought to start a zoo, and the reply was, "Well, why don't you do it?" So that's how it all began.
Who were some of the individuals who were involved in supporting him in his efforts in creating the zoo?
Oh, I don't recall the names of all of the original founders that he had, but I would say one of the major supporters in the beginning of the zoo was Ellen Scripps. She contributed considerable funds. Well, she built the the big Scripps flying cage, which is the largest flying cage in the world. I'm not sure whether it still is, but it was then, and it was for many years. And then, of course, she also donated money for the research and hospital building in 1928. She was instrumental in helping with funds in the zoo at that time, and I think that was one of the things that really contributed. And then, of course, the monkey quadrangle, which was one of the major attractions at the zoo, that was built by all the automobile dealers in the city. They all contributed to putting that up. So those are two of them that I can remember. In the 30s, Alan Hancock was very instrumental in helping get animals and going down the Mexican coast and down to South America and bringing back specimens, bringing in things to build up the collection. And of course, in the early days, people from all over the city and the county, anybody that would capture a rabbit or a skunk or anything like that, why, they'd bring it in, tarantulas and anything that moved when it came in. I guess, well, the gas company gave a lot of old pipe that they had, and that's what was used to put up the fencing and on the Deer Mesa. So that's where that came. Dr. Harry was always scrounging. For cement or steel or anything he could get his hands on, why, he was out to get it for the zoo.
I wanted to ask you about some of that. I was reading an article in the San Diego Union, I think it was from the 1920s, and it said whenever there was a shortage of funds for the zoo, there would be a feeding of the pythons raised funds. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that as to what that event was.
Yeah, I can remember growing up to see that quite a few times, and it usually wind up with a group of sailors and Marines volunteers, and they'd get a hold of the python and they'd stretch him out, and there'd be a sailor and a Marine as close as they could stand together, and they'd stretch out, and I think this thing was something like 28 feet long, and then they'd take a sausage grinder and take the hose off of it and stick it in the python's mouth, and they'd start turning the crank and feed the python, and I think one of the interesting things was that when Charles Lindbergh came back to San Diego after he'd made his flight across the Atlantic, that they had a great huge reception for him in the old Balboa Park Stadium. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they did there was feed the python.
I'll be.
And the python stretched out and fed the python.
I understand that your father was quite effective in raising funds in the community. I was wondering if you would elaborate on some of his activities in this regard.
Well,
any particular things, any particular projects that stand in your mind?
Well, let's see. Yeah, again, he gave Ellen Scripps donated the. I'm pretty sure she donated the money to build the cages for the anthropoid apes, and that's one of them that I can remember. But he also raised the money with the from the automobile dealers and getting money to build the monkey quadrangle. Of course, one of the stories about his raising money was related to the I'll say was related to the aquarium committee, and I think it was about 1924. We went to San Francisco, and I was 8 years old, I think, at the time, and we went up to look at old sailing ships. And being a youngster then, I can't remember exactly where they were all lined up, but I believe it was in the area up around Redwood City or up along the coast between mm-hmm. where the airport is now. At any rate, all these sailing ships were all lined up, one alongside of the other. And there was a 2x12 plank in between dolphins, and we walked across these things and finally arrived at the Star of India. And went on board and took a look at the Star of India, which was a real mess. I mean, nobody had taken any care of it, and it was just littered with junk and trash all over. But at any rate, why, that was the one that he picked. He raised the money to bring it down, and I don't recall the man's name now, but he was the owner, I guess, of the Foreign Club in Tijuana, and he put up the $10,000 to buy the Star of India and bring it to San Diego. And it was to be the centerpiece of an aquarium. Dr. Harry, every year that he used to go back to Johns Hopkins to study every year. And while he was back there, he would go to New York. And there was a group of people in New York who were experts on aquariums throughout the world. And he got information from them and had plans drawn for an aquarium to be here in San Diego. And he raised the money. I think I've forgotten what the figure was, the first figure, but at any rate, he raised enough money to build the aquarium, and he wanted to put it right where the county administration building is down there in the bulkhead. It wasn't there at that time, mm-hmm. and the city council wouldn't let him have it. So that deal fell through, and the Star of India just continued to sit. And later on, during the latter part of the 30s, he became very active with the Putnam sisters, and the Putnam sisters were the heirs to the Timken money, and they agreed to put up $5 million, which would have built the aquarium at that time. And the second go around, he made the request to put the aquarium where the Navy Field is, where they're talking about putting the convention center right now. And again, it was turned down. And later, these same plans that he had were used to build Marineland in Florida.
Oh.
And that would have been here in San Diego had the city council allowed him to have that property. But twice he had enough money to build San Diego, one of the finest aquariums that there would be in the country. And of course, later on, why, SeaWorld came up with the plans for what they're doing now. But it could have been started prior to that.
Did he see this aquarium here as a part of the Zoological Society, or would it be independent of the society?
I really don't know, but at the time, the Aquarium Society, the Aquarium Committee within the Zoological Society was active right up until after World War II. And following World War II, the Star of India had to take the spars off of her and take all the topmasts off. Because she was tied up down next to where the ferry slips were, and the flying boats were coming in and out of there during the war, and the Navy didn't want all of these tall masts sticking up. So here was the old Star of India down there without any spars and everything on her, and really we didn't feel that we wanted to keep our interest in the Star, and the Aquarium Committee wanted to split off. And so they split off from the zoo, and they were Welcome to the Star of India. That's how I got separated from the Zoological Society.
I wanted to ask you his work in the community and outside of the community. What were his tactics in increasing the membership of the zoo?
Dr. Harries?
Yes.
Well, he died when we only had about 600 members. And of course, the city was pretty small, and at the beginning of World War II, I think we only had around 120,000 people here. And so, you know, we were the business people and the professional people practically all knew each other. And Dad, I guess, he got a good many of them to join the society. And it wasn't really until, as I say, until in the 50s that the curve really started to go up on membership.
I understand that he put an ad in the San Diego Union asking for interested people, and I think only six people responded, and five of those